Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Aaron Sagers, and this is Talking Strange.
Aloha, spooky nerds, and welcome to Talking Strange, a paranormal pop culture show with the Den of Geek Network. I'm your host, journalist, researcher of all things weird, Aaron Sagers, currently seen on Travel Channel and Discovery Plus's Paranormal Caught on Camera. And soon, I'm going to just tease, keep an eye out. There's another announcement on the way that should be a pretty big deal. So watch this space, as it were, when we can talk about it. Well, as you know, it is spooky season once again, which means it is time for some haunted house attractions. And I talk a lot about supposedly real hauntings, but I love me some haunted houses. And the fact that I grew up in Orlando means that I was raised with like the best of the best of spooky houses. And I'm excited to be talking to my guest today. She is the senior manager of creative development and show direction for art and design entertainment at Universal Orlando Resort. It's a big, long title, so you know that she has to do a lot. And she is responsible for leading the creative development show direction team through the creative process and execution of all Universal Orlando marquee events, such as Halloween Horror Nights. And if you pay the slightest bit attention to spooky season and to haunted house attractions, you know Halloween Horror Nights. It's an event that I believe it's in its 31st year. And this year it is back with 10 haunted houses, 5 scare zones, 2 live shows, and lots of themed treats. I think something like 75 themed treats. And it is running this year from September 2nd to October 31st. And we are going to talk about not just this year's houses, but years past and some of her favorite houses and moments in Halloween Horror Night history. So, Laura Sauls, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. It's so exciting to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. You know, I am a spooky nerd. I love all kinds of, not just Halloween, but all throughout the year. And you get to play in this sandbox all year round. That's pretty great.
It's awesome. We are in Halloween Horror Night mode 365 around here. So we love it.
Yeah. And well, I mean, just briefly give us that timeline, because I've heard that the design or the construction begins back in March. I could be wrong, but certainly the planning and the theming and everything begins, the storylines begin long before that.
Creating, I know our marketing partners and our entertainment leadership really leans into IPs, as early as possible. We get to start to create original stories, all year round. We really do think about Halloween 365, and some of the original stories that we are currently working on for 2023's Halloween event, we kind of had conceptualized in 2021. So we're very excited to be working on Halloween throughout the year. We start building our haunted houses very early of this next year. So we'll start building houses, you know, in February. We live, breathe Halloween, like I said, 365, but we love it.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to that a little bit about the planning process. I want to talk a little bit about your background. Your bio says that you've been with Universal Orlando for more than 20 years. Now, I did reach out to Michael Aiello, who is Senior Director of Entertainment Creative, a guy that I've known for a while. He told me that you got your start as a performer in the parks. Now, he believed that was part of the Beetlejuice's graveyard review, but I've also heard it was as a singing and dancing Bride of Frankenstein.
Well, the Beetlejuice Graveyard Review had a singing and dancing Bride of Frankenstein, and that is where I got my start at Universal. So the Universal Monsters have been a part of my career since day one. With that, I then became a show director for the team. I will tell you, I have a very fun and unique story for Halloween Horror Nights, because the first things I did for Halloween Horror Nights in the late 90s were choreograph the live shows. I choreographed Inferno, which was a live show for us in 1998. I started choreographing the Bill and Ted Excellent Halloween Adventure in 1998. So soon after I started here, I started choreographing for shows, helping direct parades, and then became a part of the show direction team. When I was choreographing those Halloween shows, I called myself the purse holder for haunted houses. I'm a big fraidy cat, and I would not go into haunted houses because I was at the time not also a fan of things that scared me. So when I became a part of the show direction team, and I believe I became a part of the show direction team in 2000, and I believe it was in 2002, I was asked to be a part of the haunted house team. And I looked at then director TJ Manorino. Now he is our vice president of art and design. I looked at TJ and I said, "You know me, right?" And he goes, "No, that's exactly why I want you on this team. You know what frightens you." And he goes, "And we've been doing it for a long time, and we want some, at back then, some fresh blood, if you will." So I became a part of that haunted house creative team, and I've never looked back. I love horror movies now. I love this genre, this event. Some of my best years are with the Halloween event. I've really gotten the honor and the privilege to create so many amazing just scare zones and haunted houses. And now to be able to lead that team that does that, it is just, like I said, a great honor.
Well, I guess that begs the follow-up question is, what does scare you? What are some of your creepy crawlies, your monsters under the bed?
This is very bizarre, but I am afraid of frogs, deathly afraid of frogs. And what's funny is our show direction team knows that, and they try to put frog sounds and frog characters in our haunted houses. I'm like, no, they're not real frogs. They don't scare me in our haunted houses. So, but that is the thing that I am deathly afraid of. My husband laughs at that. He's like, "Frogs don't hurt you." And I'm like, "I know. They don't jump straight." So that is my fear. I think we tap into everyone's fears at the content we put into Halloween.
Those early days, as I mentioned, I'm originally from Orlando, and I think I must have been going during the early days. That would have been probably middle school or beginning of high school for me. And I know that if not the first year, it was pretty early on for me. And I have such fond recollections of that. And it seems like, even though I can't say that I have gone every single year since, that's been a lot, I have these moments where I return to it. And I even remember, I think it was maybe 2004, going through, and there was this event taking place of Halloween Horror Nights. I think there were these scarecrow mazes. It was a scare zone. And shortly around that time, there was also a hurricane coming through Central Florida. And I've never asked anyone about this, but I'm curious about how that impacted not just the operations of Halloween Horror Nights, but the creative direction when it seems like, wow, okay, all of our hard work might literally blow away.
Well, the team definitely, works overtime in creating all of this stuff. It's funny you mention that. There is a kind of a bit of a legend or a bit of a superstition, if you will, for us here at Universal Orlando, that we stay away from live corn, because that year we had the cornfield connecting the two parks, because that was a two park kind of a event. That was the first year we actually planted and grew live corn, and we had hurricanes. We then, when we did the Scarecrow House a few years ago, we planted live corn and we had a hurricane. So we stay away from planting live corn. Even in our tribute store, they don't have live corn in there. It's a plant that kind of emulates corn. In our scare zone this year, first thing we went out to see, our scare zone in New York is called Sweet Revenge, and it's celebrating a Halloween party. And we saw corn out there. I went up to it immediately and felt it to make sure it wasn't live corn. So it's a bit of a superstition around here that if we plant corn, those hurricanes will come, so we don't plant corn.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Any other superstitions that, you know, in the theater, you don't say Macbeth, right? And there's lots of things that we don't do in the entertainment business. Any other specific to Halloween Horror Nights and Orlando?
I mean, that's the biggest one. The corn is a pretty big deal here. Even when they were shooting our national commercial, we made sure that the corn that they were using for the Scarecrow portion was not live.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's funny because people will look at you, people from outside of our walls will look at you like, are you serious? I'm like, nope, we're dead serious. It happens.
Since you transitioned into the Halloween Horror Nights development team, what were some of your favorite babies, your children, that you have in a special fondness for looking back?
There's so many. I hate naming them, but there are so many. The original Psychoscarapy I had the great pleasure of working on. That was just such an awesome house that first year over in the Discovery Center. Hellgate Prison, Castle Vampire. There's just so many of them. The All Night Die-ins. And really working on the scare zones as well. Every anniversary year, really bringing back all those icons that we love. I personally got to be a part of the opening moment, the caretaker's year. So I have a little special place in my heart for the caretaker. And then in 2000, Jack's first year, I got to choreograph Jacked Up, which was the first show that, you know, featured Jack. So again, Jack has a sweet place in my heart. But it's really, you know, just getting to work on this content and getting over my fear very quickly of haunted houses. Originally, when I would go through those early, my early years, when I go through those haunted houses, I would, to block the characters knowing I was scared, I would clap for them. And still to this day, so many of them know if I clap, I really got scared.
Do you find, it takes a special kind of person to do this job, because you're doing your job right when you're scaring other people. Do you have these moments where you see people exiting the houses and they're freaked out and they're screaming and you're like, all right, a job well done?
It's one of our favorite pastimes. The show direction team loves. You'll find us so many times just hanging out at the end of the houses, because we love to hear the feedback from the guest experience once they come out of the house. And typically, they may be running and screaming in fright when they leave the house, but then they fall into laughter. It's just something that your brain does, that it really is the best of both worlds. But it is something we love to do. We love to sit at the exit of the haunted houses. And sometimes we hear great critical feedback too, that really allows us to learn what people are liking, learn what people want more of, and just learn what people love about the haunted house.
It was a couple of years ago, I did for a video for a story. I was a scare actor for a night at it's called Terror Behind the Walls. It's a not-for-profit one in Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. And I had such a blast I have such respect for the actors who are doing this job, because it is grueling. It is physically demanding. It's a lot. But I had such a blast, even though I was so worn out by the end of the night. But the joy that you elicit from scaring other people, from people screaming when you're intentionally trying to make them scream. It's satisfying.
Yeah, our characters are the backbone of the event, right? The designs are incredibly beautiful, but if we didn't have those characters, it wouldn't bring us the scares. So we really do can't thank them enough for the work that they do and the commitment they have to scaring our guests and making that a completely immersive experience for our guests in our haunted houses and scare zones.
Well, let's talk a little bit about 2022. As I mentioned, there are 10 houses, and just doing a quick rundown, we do have the Spirits of the Coven. That's a 1920s speakeasy with a witch coven ingredient. There's Bugs Eaten Alive for this kind of skin crawling infestation sci-fi adventure, retro sci-fi adventure, with roaches and spiders and everything. There's the Fiesta de Chupacabras, which involves our mythical fanged creature, very much for my paranormal people. And Hellblock Horror, which is horrifying monsters who are serving time. Dead Man's Pier, Winter's Wake, about a seaside village ruled by an undead fisherman. And then the bloodthirsty mutants living in a post-apocalyptic subway system and Descendants of Destruction. Now, those are original concept houses, but once again, you are using IP such as the Universal Monsters. We have Legends Collide, and that involves the Wolfman, the Mummy, Dracula. We have Halloween, John Carpenter's Halloween, Halloween Returns, and The Weeknd, which is just a fascinating one that we need to talk about. And then, of course, the Blumhouse houses. So let's kind of overview. Did you have a mission going into 2022 and a overarching theme? Or was this, well, we just have these houses and we're going to put them on?
Well, we really ultimately every year try to really create a diverse slate. So there is something for everyone. If we had 10 slasher houses, I think people that love slasher movies would be ecstatic, but not everyone loves a slasher movie. So we really want to diversify the content. That's kind of what drives us every year, is to make sure we do have something for everyone. And like you said, the Bugs Eaten Alive house kind of gives you that comedy horror, you know, because it's set in the 1950s at this World's Tech Fair and BuzzCon. This company is showing off their latest exterminaire product that's supposed to heat the home, air condition the home, and kill all those pesky pests in the home. But as we go into this showroom of BuzzCon, something goes wrong, right? Immediately something goes wrong. And this pesticide is not killing the bugs. It's mutating the bugs. The bugs aren't dying. They're multiplying. So again, that's that fun kind of horror. As you mentioned, Spirits of the Coven, that 1920s prohibition, where these witches are enticing you to come into their speakeasy so they can turn you into their witch's brew, which then they smuggle to other covens around the world. It's just a fun kind of, you know, witchy atmosphere, but it's a really fun era to kind of sink into. And then, you know, working with The Weeknd and his whole entire team, really getting into Abel's brain of what really he likes in the horror genre, and really attacking those nightmares and extrapolating those nightmares into that house. For me, walking through that house the first time with everything running, it's like really going into that after hours club with everything you want from a haunted house, right? With those scares around every corner, but it's really the music and the lights really set it off as something new and unique to horror nights. Of course, working with the classic monsters, I have a place in my heart for those classic monsters. We love telling new stories with the classic monsters. The Bride of Frankenstein Lives in last year's event, and then getting this opportunity to really tap into the Dracula has a curse. He can't walk in the daylight, right? Larry Talbot has a curse of the Wolfman and the Moon. And then Karras has the curse of wearing this amulet on his chest. So really making these legends collide to really get to release their curses. They're all after that amulet to release their curses. It was just fun to create. But again, we really go into it trying to have a diverse slate. There's something for everyone.
And with the Universal Monsters Legends Collide, this is also, this is a bi-coastal event with Hollywood. Can you talk a little bit about that collaboration?
Yeah, well, it was a great collaboration between both coasts and really trying to get that story of all of these Universal Monster Legends coming together to really help battle to kind of get that amulet to release their curses. But both coasts kind of wanted to set it in two different atmospheres and in two different places. And both stories are very cyclical. If you see Orlando's first and then see Hollywood's second, that's okay. If you see Hollywood's first and Orlando's second, that's okay. The stories can work together. There's not a part one, a part two. They're kind of, they can live together. And that was a great collaboration between our Universal Hollywood partners and Orlando partners. It was just a great collaboration. The same with the Weekend After Hours Nightmare. That was a great collaboration between our Orlando and Hollywood partners in creating that haunted house. So we really try to collaborate as much as we can.
It's really ambitious. I want to stick with the Universal Monsters for a moment. First off, I am definitely a Universal Monsters junkie and absolutely love anytime Universal embraces those classic characters, those classic IP. And but this does seem like an ambitious endeavor, this kind of two parts, even if they're cyclical, two part kind of storyline. Is this the first time that that's happened? I know there's shared stories and then there's different kind of space considerations depending on the house, but is this the first time there's been two parts to a house and they're working in tandem with both coasts?
Bride of Frankenstein Lives was really the first time that the stories for both coasts kind of melded together. Both coasts had very different haunted houses, their settings, but the storylines were the same. I think it's the same for Universal Monsters Legends Collide, is that the story beats are the same. They're just set in two different settings. And that really is, to your point, the locations we both have to work with are very different on both coasts.
And with the Weekend, it's, you're dealing with this artist, this musician who has become incredibly popular and is incredibly talented. And I think it's immensely cool that he has this idea for a haunted house, and really his videos, his albums, they have a lot of themes that can lend themselves to this. But there is also the challenge of telling a story, and you know how to tell a story as a haunted house. There is that challenge of working with this personality driven house, but still keeping it scary and satisfying to maybe people that don't know The Weeknd. So can you talk about the challenge and the balances of approaching that?
Well, I mean, really, we were very excited to work with The Weeknd and with this After Hours album and all of those themes in his After Hours videos, short films. We were very excited about that. I do know we all were a little apprehensive of, okay, the music is very upbeat and you want to dance to it. Is that going to be something that in a haunted house is going to work with the scares? And I think overwhelmingly it does, right? Overwhelmingly it does. And we got to try new things. We got to experiment with new things with this IP, you know, really programming these awesome lights to the beat of the music. It's the first time we've ever done that within a haunted house. And that really adds so much to this haunted house. But really, again, seeing some of those more showy-like moments, feeling those scares. I think it was just, again, a great collaboration, and we really enjoyed working with our weekend partners and working with our USH partners, because it was a great collaboration to bring those nightmares that are a part of the After Hours album to life.
And just a quick side note, is it accurate that Slash composed the music for the Universal Monsters Legends Collide?
For the Universal Hollywood House, Slash has been doing their monster houses for the last couple years. Here at Universal Orlando, we tend to take a more, think movie theater score for our haunted houses. So we have not yet had Slash compose any music for our haunted houses, but I do know Slash has composed music for not only Universal Monsters Legends Collide, but he also produced the music for the Universal Hollywood Bride of Frankenstein Lives house.
Oh, cool. And, you know, you mentioned the movie score, and I think that that definitely is evident when you walk through. It does have, it's very, it definitely sets the tone for the experience about that we are about to have. Yeah, something I've always wondered is, I know there's an incredible amount of detail that goes into these stories behind the scenes, and we're walking through for a couple minutes each, and we're seeing this, and we're gathering the snippets of the story, but is there overall Bibles of what the stories are? And the follow-up is that, how can we see these? I would have such an appetite for reading the overall deep dive story on these houses.
Well, we do. We fully flesh out a narrative for our creative treatments, all that stuff, so that when we're rolling out to all of our technical partners, production partners, our costuming partners, all those different groups and parts of entertainment that come together to really tell those stories within the haunted house. We do kind of deep dive into a more fully fleshed out story. Sometimes we're able to, you know, we have a couple podcasts this year that kind of take a deeper look into some of the stories. I did the podcast for Dead Man's Pier, the Fisherman's Sonata story. Some of our team did Fiesta de Chupacabras. There's a backstory of one of the characters in that house on the podcast, as well as we deep dived into some of the other haunted houses and scare zones. So those podcasts are a way to kind of hear more of that story. But yeah, we don't really publish any of those stories. I know there is a fan base for that, but we don't really publish any of those deeper stories yet.
I apologize. I didn't know that there was a podcast dedicated to this. Can you plug that for me? What's the name of it? What's the official name?
Yeah. And Sarah, I might ask you, it's the Universal Orlando podcast. You should be able to find it on your universalorlando.com. And you should be able to find each one of these Halloween Horror Night stories on that podcast.
Okay, great. And with the John Carpenter's Halloween podcast, I'm going to take a brief detour that Sarah, our publicist in the background, has let me know that it's called Discover Universal, and we'll acquire that link as well. But with the John Carpenter's Halloween house, obviously we have this new trilogy of Halloween, which is a direct sequel to John Carpenter's films. But there's also previously been Halloween houses at Halloween Horror Nights. So what was the decision to bring this back? And is this the same Halloween horror house that we saw before? Or is this a revamp of it and so forth?
Well, we really wanted to bring to Halloween Horror Nights where Halloween began. And so we really wanted to tap into that 1978 film, which we have done a house based on that original film before. But really this year, we wanted you to be able to come to Halloween Horror Nights and see where Halloween began, and then go to the theaters and see how it ends. We really felt that was an awesome opportunity for us this year. And really examining that original movie again, and really examining it in ways that we hadn't before. I know a few things that we talked about in the creative room this year is that the car was such a character of it in its own. And so we wanted to make sure we saw the car taking you to the asylum. We wanted to see those patients that are in, you know, early in the film. We wanted to kind of take you step by step through the film, seeing young Michael, then going into the title sequence, just so you felt like you were really in the movie. So there are definitely places, we have done this house before, but there are definitely places that we've never been to in our past haunted houses for Halloween. Okay.
I know we're running out of time here, and I do want to, oh man, we didn't even get to the food and the live shows and everything. There's so much happening this year at Halloween Horror Night. I guess the thing I have to ask is, because I do talk about spooky topics, and I think sometimes places that are not intended to be haunted or spooky, who knows, it might stir up certain kinds of activity. Has anything weird ever happened in the houses where you start to think, well, this place might actually be a haunted house?
Not to my knowledge, although, you know, we're in Florida and bugs are synonymous with getting into places in Florida. So one of the first times we walked through the bug house, and one of the first days the actual fake bugs were put in, a moth flew in front of my face and I was jumped out of my skin. but I don't think we've had any real spooky moments happen yet. I mean, we're only 31. We've got several years to go. You never know.
Still alive and kicking. I like it. Well, the bugs thing, I mean, Michael Myers is, that's always going to be able to startle me. And the bugs thing is what's going to creep me out and make me just, you know, kind of shake and get the willies and everything. That's the level of experience for me. And Laura, again, we have Halloween Horror Nights. It's featuring 10 haunted houses, 5 scare zones, 2 live shows, 75 themed treats and beverages, such as 100% ground princess, which is sort of like a Rice Krispie treat, but instead it's ground princess. And Halloween Horror Nights Orlando runs from September 2nd to October 31st. And thank you, Laura Sauls, Senior Manager of Creative Development and Show Direction for Art and Design Entertainment at Universal Orlando, for joining me today to talk all things Halloween Horror Nights 31 and years past. And for everyone out there, until next time, be kind, stay spooky, and keep it weird. Talking Strange is a part of the Den of Geek Network, available wherever you listen to other podcasts. If you like what we're doing, share Talking Strange with your friends and fellow spooky nerds. And please subscribe, rate, and leave a nice review. If you have a strange or paranormal story you would like to share with us, please email talkingstrange@denofgeek.com for a chance to have it read on a future episode. For video episodes of Talking Strange, check out twitch.tv/denofgeektv and youtube.com/denofgeekus. And please follow @talkstrangepod on Twitter and @AaronSagers on Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon for more paranormal pop culture content.